He's got a beautiful backswing.
He got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Oh my God, you had to deal with the golf course people too!
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know?
Welcome everybody to another edition of the 73rd Hole. Colby Powell, Taylor Williams with you, recapping the Zozo Championship. And yes, we are normally on earlier in the week. It's a very astute observation by our listeners. We got some weather here in Oklahoma City causing some power issues and some problems. So hope everybody's staying safe out there, and glad we could get with you on this Wednesday. John Rahm, I told you last week, Taylor, I told you he was going to win the tournament, and he almost did. He finished second to Patrick Cantlay. Patrick Cantlay beats the world's number 2 and 3 and gets the third win, I believe, of his PGA Tour career. So, of course, the week that I don't bet Patrick Cantlay, he's able to go ahead and cross the finish line and get the trophy.
Yeah, that's normally what happens. Normally, if you or like my dad, I was talking to him the other day, and he bet another second-place golfer. It's like his eighth that he's bet in the last 18 months or something. It's really pretty crazy. And I thought it was interesting how when we did our previous show in our draft, in my DraftKings, I was debating between Thomas and Rory, and it's good to see I made the right decision there.
Like, yeah, you picked Rory.
Yeah, I did pick Rory, yes. And JT was high, had the money, didn't pick him. I was like, oh, no, he ain't going
to
finish.
Oh, Rory backdoored to top 17.
Yeah, compared to the guy who choked off the last four holes to lose by a stroke. So I don't know what all. I know you had funeral obligations, Colby, for the passing of great LJ Powell. So I don't know how much of the golf you got to see, but coming down the stretch, for JT on 15, for everyone that was watching, and I don't know if you got to see it, Colby.
I didn't get to see it. I was actually on the way home from Chickasha. I was listening on the radio. So I wasn't watching, but I was listening. So I got to hear them kind of break down the kind of back nine disasters from John Rahm and Justin Thomas, who each shot even par on the back nine trying to win a golf tournament on an easy golf course. Anyway, go ahead. On 15, Justin Thomas.
So on 15, Thomas and his caddy, it always slips my mind what his name is.
Jimmy Johnson, I believe.
There it is, yep. Because, I mean, it's such a unique name. I don't know how I could not remember that. So he's on the tee box, and you can just tell Thomas is confused by the wind, what club to hit. He doesn't know. I mean, he's turns out he has one less club. What it sounded like was he had the 8 and he wanted to hit the 7, or maybe it was the 9 and the 8, whatever it was. He had the lesser club, wanted to hit more. Jimmy Johnson was talking him into hitting the less club, and he ended up hitting it. You could tell. I mean, he took probably 5 minutes to hit the shot, Colby. I mean, it's one of those ones where you're watching it and you know that, like, there's no way he's committed to this shot. Like, there's no way you can take that long and stand over it and second guess and hit a good shot.
And isn't that wild? Because we all do that as golfers. But to see one of the best players in the world have a yardage, he's played this hole 5 days in a row, you count the practice round. I mean, they kind of know how this hole's playing, and still stands up there and just can't commit to a club.
Well, and, you know, it was kind of where the tournament changed, because on 15 in the group before, Cantlay hit one of the best shots of the tournament to, 10 feet or whatever, really about as close as you could hit it there, because the pin was tucked on the front and everything. You couldn't get it to stick and just backspin or anything like that. So everyone was either hitting it past onto the left side in that back rough or back of the green, or where Thomas did, just in the hay kind of by the rocks. And so Cantlay was able to hit that great shot in there, make birdie. And you could just tell Thomas wasn't committed, and I've heard a lot of people, you know, they're ripping the caddy because they felt like, and first of all, the player has all the say. So if Thomas wanted to hit more club, he should hit the more club. But at the end of the day, if you look at the shot on the video, he would have been probably closer to the hole than Cantlay was had he been online, because he pulled it. Either he pulled it or the wind didn't take it by about probably 10 yards to the left. And the way the green shapes out, it's kind of like a circle essentially. So, you know, if you're going straight at it, the left side is further the carry than the very center. So if had he hit it dead straight, he would hit probably would end up being a perfect shot. And so I think for anyone who's ripping the caddy, and it kind of got distracted by the fact that Thomas hit the horrible shot that he did in the 16 when he was basically right in the middle of the fairway, 240 something yards out. Great chance to make, especially birdie, if not eagle, and get himself into a lot better position. But, you know, had the opportunity was it. And I say he lost by one. He had a great shot in there. Knew he needed to hole it on 18 to force a playoff. Hit it to about 2 feet, which is really good. You know, most of the time when you do that, you normally try to force it and miss the green. But he was able to do that. And you could tell how frustrated he was coming up the stretch. So, you know, breaking down this tournament, you know, talking a lot about JT here. The reason I say that is, you know, I felt like, and Rom had his opportunities as well. I just felt like this was Thomas's tournament to lose, especially when Cantlay messed up 16 like he did, because I don't know if you saw that, Colby, but he laid up to essentially a perfect number on the right side of the fairway and pulled his wedge shot like 15 yards into the tree. And he got a lucky bounce for it to drop down where it did and made a mediocre non-up and down for a bogey. But he could have, I mean, he literally pulled this wedge into this tree. It could have bounced down and he could have had 70-yard punch shot in. And it bounced down 30 yards short of the green and into the rough short-sided. So, you know, I keep talking about Thomas. You know, I felt like this was Thomas's tournament to lose, and that's what happened. And I think his non-commitment on 15 is where it lost him, where Cantlay was able to hit that great shot in there and make birdie. Even though Cantlay did have that bad stretch on 16 coming down, I do think that Thomas definitely had all the opportunities to win and really should have won the tournament. And I, from what I saw, I think he played the best out of everyone this week. But he did not hoist the trophy, which is kind of what happens.
Yeah, Thomas was 3-under through 6 on Sunday, proceeded to play his final 12 holes at even par on what is a really easy golf course. I mean, guys were lighting it up.
Minus 11 got you T41 this week.
Yeah, I mean, it's an easy golf course. He played his last 12 at even par, and then John Rahm was 5-under through 11. And
sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you there, but how many par 5s were in that stretch?
In the last 12 holes?
Yeah.
Let's see.
4 or 3?
That's 3.
There's at least 3, because there's 3 on the back. So so my point being is that there's a lot of birdie opportunities to be had out there.
Yeah, he parred all 3 of the par 5s on the back. And then John Rahm kind of similarly faltered down the stretch. John Rahm was 5-under through 11, proceeds to bogey 12 and 13, which is par 3 and a par 5, and then makes a birdie coming home on 16. But he played his final 7 holes at 1-over after being 5-under through 11. So both of those guys really faltered down the stretch. And Patrick Cantlay made 9 birdies. Patrick Cantlay shot 65 and only played the 5 par 5s at 2-under par. He birdied a lot of par 4s, birdied 15, like you said, hit one of the best shots of the day in there. So it was a good win for Patrick Cantlay. Let's talk about what we saw this past week out of Tiger Woods. He goes 76-66 his first two rounds. So all the bad Thursday, all the good Friday. And then he goes 71-74 over the weekend. Ends up finishing T72 in what was a 78-man field. Gary Woodland withdrew, so it ended up being a 77-man field. He finished T72 along with Ryukyu Hoshino, Danny Lee, and Nico Sakito. Only Phil Mickelson and Michael Thompson were further down the list than Tiger Woods. So what do you think we saw from Tiger in his first action since the U.S. Open?
Yeah, you know, 2 points I want to make from there. One, did you see the Woodland withdrawal? What happened with him?
No, I have no idea.
He withdrew on Thursday. He was 3-under through 6 or 7 holes.
And I knew he withdrew on Thursday, but
he was playing good.
Was it an injury? Was it COVID?
It was a back-related
back
thing. You could tell it didn't show the situation where he tweaked it, but they showed the video of him having the trainer out there, stood on the tee box. I believe it was a par 3 even. He wasn't even trying to hit a driver. Took it back with an iron, just set it down, said he couldn't go. So somewhere along the lines, he stepped or tweaked or swung and messed his back up. But I thought it was interesting because, you know, they made a comment on commentary, and it's very true. You know, most of the time when players withdraw, they're 5-over, 6-over, something like that. You know, Woodland was, I mean, he was playing really good. He was up there on top of the leaderboard.
That's a weird deal.
And I know it. And so, I mean, these golfers aren't athletes. You know, if you say these golfers aren't athletes, you don't think golf's a sport. Well, they can get injured just like athletes can. So, I mean, he's right in the middle of competition.
Well, he's probably exhausted from having to carry the entire University of Kansas on his back all these years.
And if he was a football player, but he was supposedly a basketball player. So
yeah, he's the pride of Lawrence.
Yeah, pretty much right now. Yeah, with what's going on. So going back to your Tiger comment, you know, I thought the comment I made on Sunday was, if you would have told me Tiger and Phil were playing in the same group as late as they were in the afternoon, it would have sounded like a great proposition. But they were down there battling out for DFL with Michael Thompson, so it didn't end up being as good as we thought. And
by the way, Tiger got the head-to-head Vic over Phil on Sunday,
and I'm sure he's bragging a lot about it.
His 74 taking down Phil 78.
God, they kept showing a little bit. I mean, it was some bad golf that was being played. Bad golf, and you know, unfortunately, Colby, I think it's a sad sign. I think it's I think it's not good for either one of the players going into Augusta. I mean, I know we talked last week, you know, I brought up, obviously we talked about Tiger, he's the defending champion, and how, you know, last year his irons were so great, which is what propelled him to win the tournament. And with his irons not being as good as they are, it's going to be hard for him to contend. And I brought up, you know, Phil being an interesting name. Well, with how he played last week, I mean, I just don't think there's any way. And I think you're starting to see, you know, he's played on the Champions Tour twice, has won twice. And every time he goes down the big tour, he finishes way down there. Well, I mean, Champions Tour, they're not playing easy courses by any stretch of imagination, but they have a lot less rough, and obviously the courses are shorter. So even if Phil's able to get it down there in play, you know, he's hitting it so far. I mean, he posted the funny picture of, you know, he carried it 337 or whatever, and the guy commented and was like, was it in the fairway? And he said, who cares? 337, baby. And so, you know, he...
That's peak Phil.
It truly is. And so, you know, if Phil's out there on the you know, Champions Tour, and he's able to go out there and hit wedges every hole, he's going to make a shitload of birdies because he's the best wedge player of all time. And you get out here on some of these longer courses, this is where he's struggling. And so, you know, I mean, how many – that'd be interesting. We need to look it up to get the exact number. How many starts combined do Tiger and Phil have at Augusta? Is it 50?
Oh, God, probably.
Do they have 25 each?
I mean, you're looking back. Tiger's first start was in 96 at Augusta, right?
Well, especially if we include then. Amateur starts, too.
Yeah, you know? He's missed a few since then. So Tiger's probably at, I don't know, 21, 22 starts, maybe, something like that.
And I don't think – has Phil ever missed a Masters? I mean, obviously, since he – in the 90s or whatever.
I don't think so. And he played his first in 92, I want to say. So, I mean, he's probably going on 28-ish Masters, so they're probably very near 50 Masters between the two of them.
And you know, you make that sound like a lot. That's a lot of tournament experience. I think Arnie retired playing his 50th straight Masters. So, I mean, both of these guys got a long ways to go, and I'm sure Phil will probably end up being the guy who either ties or breaks Arnie's record. But, you know, just bringing that up because Augusta is a horses-for-courses type of place, and I mean, these guys, Colby, I mean, they are the definition of not on form. I mean, at least on the PGA Tour, like we said, Phil going out on the Champions Tour winning looks all high and pretty. But then once he goes out here, plays with the – gets back on the big tour and finishes DFL, it's very, very intriguing to say the least. And I think they're going to obviously be the biggest – I think they'll be the biggest storylines going into Augusta. Maybe Rory on – obviously – I think it'll go like this, Colby. I think DeChambeau will probably be the biggest talking point just because who knows what he's going to do with his driver and what kind of strategy he's going to take. So I think he's going to be the most interesting talking point. Then obviously Tiger defending the green jacket. And now Tiger only has one defending championship. Unfortunately, he lost his Zozo title. So now the green jacket is the only thing that has Tiger going on. So hopefully, I don't think there's any way that he wins it again. But if he can, I mean, I will cry as many tears of joy as you've ever seen. And so, you know, I think that it'll go Bryson, Tiger, and then probably Phil down there just because, you know, he would 50 horse for course, kind of bomb headed out there. And then he hadn't been playing very well, backdoor to top 17, like I said, Cole, but Rory's going to be in one of the other bigger storylines because this, I mean, it's the Fall Masters, chance to win the Grand Slam, and I think it'll go somewhere along that lines of story. And so going into the Tiger conversation, I don't think that it's just the same thing. Nothing I've seen has propelled me to think that he's going to play good golf anytime soon. There's nothing in his full swing. There's nothing in his short game, his putting, nothing where I say, oh man, that could carry him to win a championship. Because even if you have just one or two things off in your swing, if you're putting really good or you're driving it really good, you have something that can keep the floor of your game really high. And unfortunately, Colby, I just don't think he has that right now.
Yeah, I don't either. I added it up just now. Tiger has 22 Masters appearances. Phil has 29. So that makes 51 between the two of them with the combined 7 victories. So not a bad record at Augusta between the two of them. Eight victories. 5-3?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 5-3. I was doing 4-3.
2004, 2006, 2010, take, 97, 2001, 2002,
2005, 2019. Yep. Yeah, not bad.
Yeah,
not a bad record. 8 out of 50, what's that? 1-6, 17%, something like that. Pretty good success.
That's pretty good, Matt.
Between those two. I watched a lot of Tiger on Thursday and on Friday. And, you know, Friday looked good. Friday was one of the lowest scoring rounds in the history of the PGA Tour. everybody went low on Friday at Sherwood. Now, that being said, he still played good. I mean, you don't discount the good golf that he played on Friday. It was a much better round, especially than Thursday, and he didn't break 70 in either of the weekend rounds. But no, I'm not real optimistic about Tiger going into Augusta. He's not playing Houston next week. There were some rumors that he may play Houston. I know you and I...
There was no way he was playing Houston. I mean, if he did, then that was the ultimate sign that, man, he is lost.
Yeah. And I mean, so, we laughed at the idea last week whenever it was brought up that he might play Houston. It's like, come on, Tiger ain't playing Houston. We know Tiger's not playing Houston. You know what he's going to do? He's going to go out in his backyard and he's going to get ready for the Masters. Or you know what he's going to do? He's going to hop on his jet and he's going to go to Augusta National Golf and Country Club and he's going to prepare for the Masters. He ain't going to Houston.
No, there's no chance. And I don't know I believe the field will be set on Friday is the last day. That's when normal tour events start, is the Friday before. So it'll be interesting to see, how many of the big names that the field draws. Because like we talked about last week, Colby, this first event with it being fans, and I don't believe I haven't seen them change anything. That's still the plan, correct? That's
still the plan. And we talked about last week, Phil made his comments after we recorded, but you and I just talked about separately about Phil's comments about them having fans back and how if the Champions Tour doesn't have fans in Phoenix the same week, he'll probably go out there because he's not really prepared to play in front of fans the week before the Masters.
And ain't that crazy? I mean, how much different? I mean, obviously, and you think about it too, Phil's an Arizona guy in Phoenix, and then, but you got to think, he's trying to prepare for the Masters. And normally, I mean, Phil's one of those guys who does play the week before, and I just don't see any way how that Phoenix Champions Tour course is going to be anywhere comparable to what Augusta National would be like. I mean, I don't see any way. And they say that the Houston course is somewhat similar to Augusta, which is one of the reasons why they used to host the Houston Open before Augusta all the time back when it was a regular or in the, I guess, the spring schedule as opposed to the fall schedule. So they say that, but at the same time, you know, I mean, no course can really replicate Augusta. So I think that without fans, I think Phil would definitely play Houston. And so I think that that goes to show how impactful that fans being there in a negative connotation, which is the exact opposite of what we thought it would be, especially before all this pre-COVID stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing, and I understand why guys are nervous. We're seeing it all over sports. Last night, I mean, Justin Turner gets pulled from the ninth inning of a World Series game because for whatever reason, they were getting COVID results back in the ninth inning of a World Series game. So he gets pulled for a positive COVID test. Wisconsin now has had, I think, five players test positive. They've been in the locker room.
And yeah, they canceled their game.
They canceled that game. Wisconsin and Nebraska is canceled. If they did play, Wisconsin was going to have to play like its fourth quarterback because the first guy was already out and the next two had COVID and were the guys that had tested positive. So, I mean, it's all over sports right now, and I can understand not wanting to go down and be out there in front of fans. But congrats to Patrick Cantlay on the win last week. Taylor, Bryson DeChambeau has been doing some things. He's been doing some things.
He's always doing something. If he's not doing something, then I think the universe has stopped.
Pretty much, yes. He's a scientist, and he's been in the lab. And he's been tinkering. He released the 400-yard carry last week. Now, it was a 20-mile-per-hour downwind shot, but it was only 56 degrees, which isn't exactly ideal for long bombing, and that's probably close to what it'll be for those morning rounds at Augusta. Now, he'll be playing likely in the morning on one of those 4 days because either Thursday or Friday he'll have an afternoon tee time, and then Saturday and Sunday he'll probably have an afternoon tee time. But
well, did you see, Colby, that they're doing the...
they're doing it early on Sunday.
Well, they're doing... they have to do... Split tees. They're having to do split tees because this is the... Normally, daylight savings or whatever, there's more sunlight. So now they have to be sunlight. That's why normally Augusta's infamous for playing... Everyone starts on hole one, ends on hole 18. That's why the year Jack retired, I believe 2005, they had split tees because of the weather. And Jack actually finished on hole 9. And a lot of people thought that was very kind of a disgrace and disrespect. Not really disrespectful, but just like really, come on, Jack.
They should have penciled Jack in to tee off on one on Friday.
You should have found some way to make that work. I completely agree. And so, you know, that's what, you know, Augusta's known. So we're going to be seeing them pushed up, you know, different tee times. So
I was thinking a little more traditional. And then they'll be pushed up even further on Sunday because on Sunday they're trying to finish before the afternoon NFL game kicks off for CBS.
Which I don't think they should have a problem with doing because, I mean, whenever Tiger won last year, Colby, I mean, we got done fairly early because...
Oh, yeah, it was done 12:30 our time, so 1:30.
Yeah, I mean, that's... in all honesty, that's before halftime of the noon games. So, I mean, yeah, exactly.
Ian on an early Masters start and watching some football.
I am. If I'm going to have to wake up at 8 o'clock to watch golf, it might as well be the Masters on Sunday, like last year. And unfortunately, I don't think Tiger will be in the final group like last year, but all we can do is pray and hope, and hopefully that's what happens, you know, and then, well, in this golf world that we're talking about.
Yeah, so, I mean, Bryson, obviously, he said that that 400-yard carry was not with the 48-inch driver. He said that he wants to have a 48-inch driver in the bag at Augusta. Is that, I mean, look, Augusta is not the most penal course in the world. If you miss fairways, you can miss fairways and still find some gaps. And I mean, you're hitting off pine straw, which for these guys, really no big deal. You just have to have your footing, but it's better than hitting out a deep rough like at Wingfoot. A lot easier to hit off of that stuff. Even the primary cut at Augusta is not too bad. So I don't know. If he can just step up there and pump it 380 on every hole, boy, he's gonna have some short shots into those holes, and he's going to make a lot of birdies. He's going to make several eagles along the way, I would have to imagine. So, I mean, I don't know. He won't even be able to hit driver on three. He's going to have to hit three wood on three, and I mean, he might have to take a little bit off three wood.
Well, and, you know, I think Matthew Fitzpatrick is probably going to be, you know, somewhere along those lines too, Cole, because it doesn't take any skill to do that. It doesn't take any skill to have a 400-yard carry and to bomb it around, because accuracy is the most important thing, and that's what golf is about. So,
as evidenced by Matthew Fitzpatrick's T26 finish this week.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's, you know, if you don't...
I mean, that's skill.
Yeah, exactly. That's what talent is. And so, just another laughable matter at the atrocity that was...
By the way, thank you for talking me into Russell Henley last week, because he finished T4, and I got third in our DraftKings pool, which was cash.
You're welcome very much. Yeah, exactly. See, that's when... normally, you try not to let the outside world take influence on your sports picks, but in this time, it's very beneficial, because absolutely, when you make jackass comments like Matthew Fitzpatrick did, you deserve to not be picked. So, you know, going back to the Bryson thing, I think that really no matter what type of golf or how they're doing it, when the last major champion wins by 6 strokes, they're going to be somewhat of a storyline going into the next major. And so, yes, you know, this is a little bit more unique, obviously, because, I mean, we've had 2 months before between the U.S. Open and the Masters. Normally, we have 8 months, and Augusta's the first Masters. And that's, for a lot of people, that's when the golf season really starts. I mean, most of the time, even like your average golf fan doesn't watch the first how many of our tournaments. You know, Augusta's when the season starts, and then the major season rolls along through, and they'll stop somewhere around the Ryder Cup if that's the year. And so that's what makes this more unique. So I don't even think, I think that Bryson's distance will obviously be the storyline, and he's just won the U.S. Open by 6 strokes, so he definitely has to be the favorite, I would think, by any stretch of the imagination. But the one thing I do not want to hope happen, Colby, as we just hear a big tree fall.
Gosh, we're just listening to trees crack and fall in the backyard, yes, out here.
For all of our Oklahoma listeners, please stay safe, and hopefully you have electricity and are able to watch this. Or
if somebody
or to
not from Oklahoma is listening, we got an ice storm going on down here, and we're on the back end of it. But these trees are heavy, and they are down everywhere. We're actually very fortunate to have power. I think 50% of Oklahoma City, last I saw, is still out of power. And then Chickasha, our hometown, which is a little bit smaller, the entire town's out of power.
Well, so, and, you know, this is a side note before we keep going, but two things. One is that it seemed like 90% of the people that we've talked to are out of power, and we're two of the lucky people that still have it. So yes, that's very good. And, you know, we kind of, one of our shows, we went into the Python thing, which was kind of funny. So this was an interesting thing too, that they were saying that, you know, this is really one of the few times that we have leaves on the trees to weigh it down on the ice, because normally when the ice comes, it's already November, December, the leaves have already died. So the leaves add more weight to the trees, which is what makes them was on the ice has made them fall so much. So thought that was an interesting fact there. And so, you know, going back to what I don't want to see happen, Colby, at this tournament is, let's say Bryson goes out there and just changes the game. Let's say he wins by 7 or 8 strokes, bombs it, takes different lines than anyone's ever hit at Augusta, that kind of thing. And then the next week, the conversation will all be about how the ball needs to be dialed back, how distance needs to be cut back. There'll be a bunch of Matthew Fitzpatricks out there saying all this different stuff, and it's like, just because one person is doing it and dominating doesn't mean that it's bad.
They didn't dial the ball back whenever Tiger was hitting it further than everybody.
They just made all the courses longer.
And now, mean, we're running out of land now.
That's the thing. We don't have much. I actually saw it's talking about getting off sidetrack. I saw a chart the other day where it was like land proportion in the United States, like what it was, you know, like farmland, lakes, oceans, all that versus that. there was a pretty good chunk size that was golf courses. I believe it. It was probably about, I'd say probably about the where they put it on the chart. It was like a third of the size of South Carolina, maybe a half the size of it. So, I mean, you're like half a state worth is of golf course. I think that's great. So, you know, like I said, they're running out of land. So what are they going to do? And so I just hope that if Bryson does win and comes out and dominates like he did at the U.S. Open, just please do not make the storyline be about how distance is bad for golf. Because if it was bad and distance was bad for everyone, Matthew Fitzpatrick would already be hitting at 350 yards.
Yeah, and that won't be the storyline on this show. So if you're tired of that, go ahead and tune in here. We'll make fun of the people who talk about that. And that includes, by the way, the two greatest of the game, Jack and Tiger, who both think that they need to dial the ball back. I couldn't disagree more. I don't think that they should have dialed it back in 2000 whenever Tiger won by 15 at Pebble Beach and was hitting it miles past everybody. I mean, he was still hitting it straight as an arrow. You still have to hit it straight. I mean, if Tiger would have stepped up on whatever day it was that Stevie ran out of balls and hooked a second one in the ocean, we wouldn't be having this conversation about Tiger winning by 15. You got to hit the fairways, and I mean, Bryson's been doing that. Bryson hit more fairways at Winged Foot than the field average.
You know what Tiger winning by 15 in 2000 did, Colby? It propelled us to where we are now. The golfers are as good as they are now because they saw how good Tiger was. You go out and get your ass beat by 15 strokes, you practice more. You practice harder. That's just how it works. These Tiger and Vijay in 2000 were the only two golfers that were working out. Besides Gary Player, some of the other guys, I mean, there was your handful of others.
Well, Gary's different.
And so, you know, we're putting into proportion here. You're talking less than probably 3%, less than 5% of the tour was working out. And now it's 95% of the tour is working out. So if probably not, I mean.
Probably 98 or 99. And then, I mean, Harry Higgs meets him in the bar after.
Well, and see, that's why I was saying 95 is because you have your Higgs and your Afro Barn rats who will say they're working out. You know, they'll throw in a 10-minute stretch session and say it's good and say that they, you know, if the rules break a sweat, those guys don't have to work as hard as some of the others, you know? And so I know that personally, being an overweight person. And so, you know, I mean, like I said, I have a bad feeling, Colby, that that's what the storyline's going to be, is that the ball needs to be dialed back and all this bullshit. When if we look at it and go 10 years down the line, if we keep going the way they were going, this is what's going to happen. We're going to have people who realize that saying though what Matthew Fitzpatrick said is absolutely stupid and that they need to get better. They need to go in the gym, become more athletes. They need to work on their swing. They need to time it better at the ball. They need to get more on plane, need to hit it further with more fairways, because if Bryson was hitting out of bounds every time, this distance wouldn't matter anyway. So you got to hit it straight.
Jamie Sadlowski hits it a mile. Jamie Sadlowski ain't on the PGA Tour.
Exactly.
There's a skill to hitting it that far and still being able to hit it straight. And I think one thing that's going a little under the radar with Bryson going into Augusta is the fact that he is very comfortable moving the ball right to left. I mean, that's kind of his preferred shot shape with the driver. We saw it on 16 at Winged Foot with that tee shot that I called one of the best I've ever seen. I mean, he's going to step up on 2, and he's going to hit that big monster draw down to the bottom. He's going to step up on 13, and he's going to hook it over the trees into 14 fairway. I mean, he's going to be playing that big high draw. I mean, the bunker on 1 is not in play. The bunker on 8 is not in play. He might take it over the corner on 9 and leave himself a 50-yard pitch up the hill into 9 green. I mean, it could get kind of silly, but, I mean, those green complexes are still crazy, crazy precise. If he hits driver all over the place, then he's going to have 60 and 70 yard wedges that he has to be incredibly controlled with. And if he's able to, he deserves to win the golf tournament.
I think with Bryce, you'll see a lot of that lower lofted 3-wood that he's got in play. I think you'll see him hit a lot of that because he'll need it off of, because I mean, if he hit driver, he'd drive in the bunker on 10.
What's his 3-wood, like 8 degree?
I think a little bit more. Correct me on that. I can look it up real fast, but I think just a smidge more, just because if you got that small head with that low loft, that ball could go, I mean, literally freaking anywhere. And so I think with Bryson, that is one thing too that's getting talked about. There's a lot of, he's going to hit driver when he can, but there's a lot of holes, Colby, where he's going to try to find some way to hit it, but it's going to be taken out of his hands on some holes. I mean, like you said, he can't hit it on 3. I'm trying to think. He could probably, 9, I think he should be fine. I mean, on 7, he may be able to drive it up in the bunkers, depending on the wind. Maybe not, because it's supposed to be colder. 5, he could take it over the bunker, so I guess it's a benefit there. Yeah, he should be able to do it on 13.
But by the way, 14, at Winged Foot, he was carrying 2 3-woods, an 11.5, and a 13.5.
Wow.
So, Yeah, that's what he's rocking with at Wingfoot.
Which is weird because normally when you see longer players or players that are longer, you'll see like for someone like Bubba who he'll have his driver, then his 3-wood will be like a 17-degree 3-wood, and then he'll have like a 3-iron, and then he'll have a shitload of wedges because he's hitting a lot of shorter shots, you know. And so, but you see someone like Bryson who has literally 3 clubs that are less than 14 degrees aloft. That's really strange.
Yeah, and the 13.5 is a 3-wood head at 5-wood length. Is what they're saying here. The one they used at Wingfoot anyway.
That makes sense, yeah, because...
Now, it could be completely different in 2 weeks at Augusta.
Well, and people make all the things, you know, oh, Bryson uses single link, you know, that's just his iron. So all his woods are going to have a little bit of different length in there, as we're seeing with the 48-inch driver, not 48-degree driver. That probably wouldn't go very far. But, I just don't know why the 48-inch driver needs to be put in play. If he's already doing...
It seems like he's hitting the current driver well enough, doesn't it?
That's what I'm thinking, but I mean, I guess if, you know, he's a scientist and analytic person, and we talk about it all the time, like in our analytics show, who, if anyone hasn't tuned into that, it's kind of one of our older shows, go back and check that out, it's really cool. I mean, every single yard you get closer to the hole, the better chance you have.
So once we get into the offseason, we might have to do it again with some new stats, now that we've kind of seen more guys start to go hit it longer.
Well, we have like a 3-week offseason, if that, so I mean, we'll have, you know, so we'll be able to, we could jam pack it with some stuff like that. And also a small preview, we got a fabulous show coming out on this Friday with a great guest that we'll get a little bit more into later on. So, you know, we have a lot of stuff coming up, you know, just for, you know, golf may be slowing down after the Masters, but the 73rd hole isn't.
Absolutely not. No way. This week, we've got Bermuda, and this field is loaded, Taylor. It is loaded with guys you've never heard of. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back, and we're going to tell you which ones need to be in your DraftKings lineups. We'll give you a couple best bets. There's always value in a field like this where anybody can pop up and win on any given week. So that's coming up next. Stay with us here on the 73rd hole.
When something the size of a golf ball hits your roof, you need to call McRae Roofing. McRae Roofing is Oklahoma's designer roofing service specialist. For years, Jeff McRae and the experienced team at McRae Roofing and Exteriors have served fellow Oklahomans by helping them with their roofing needs. McRae Roofing uses only top quality materials and professional crews to make sure that each job is done right, so it will give you the years of service, security, and protection you need from the unpredictable Oklahoma weather. McRae Roofing offers residential and commercial roofing, ventilation services, and custom copper designs. McRae Roofing is dedicated to exceeding the homeowner's expectations. It's not just a roof, it is your home's crowning glory. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000. That's 405-692-4000. Make sure to also visit their website at mcraeroofing.com. That's M-C-R-A-Y roofing.com. Don't get caught with a leaking roof. Contact McRae Roofing for your free inspection today.
Rolling along here on the 73rd hole, Colby Powell, Taylor Williams with you. Reminder, find us online, the73rdhole.com. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Search 73rd hole and you will find us. This week is the Bermuda Championship, the tournament that we've all been looking forward to all season. We've just kind of been building up to the Bermuda, where we've got Will Zalatoris and Brendan Todd as the only two players in the field at better than 25-1. To win the golf tournament.
Holy moly.
Will Zalatoris is 10-1. Brendan Todd's 11-1. Third best odds to win the tournament is Harold Varner at 25-1.
Well, you know, it may not be necessarily the best strength of field, but at least it's a wide open horse race from what it looks like.
It is absolutely.
Or this is what Vegas thinks. Yes. And I mean, literally, anyone in this field could win this tournament. And so, you know, we were talking about this during the break, Colby. We're going to play a game here. We're going to play guess the strength of field game. Are you ready to play, Colby?
Oh, man. Guess the strength of field for Bermuda. I'm looking through here. I mean, I'm trying to see if anybody.
Well, here, well, this is gonna be a 3-part question. You ready?
Okay, hit me.
What was the strength of field last week at the Zozo?
Strength of field last week at the Zozo, 78-man field, but a lot of really good players. I'm gonna say it had a strength of field around 500.
645.
Wow, 645.
Because okay. It drew essentially all the big names except for DJ with
DJ Cope. And Bryson. Yeah,
yeah, with DJ and Bryson. Absolutely. All right. So now, second question, Colby. What is the strength of field at the Aphrodite Hills Cypress Open over on the European Tour?
That's a really good question. Aphrodite, you said?
Aphrodite, I believe that's right, yep. Oh, it might be Aphrodite, but Aphrodite? I don't know why they're
Greek
naming
it. Greek goddess of beauty?
Yeah, of fertility. She was a whore.
Was it fertility?
Something like that. They're a lot.
It's irrelevant. I'm going to guess that the strength of field for that tournament is 200.
45.
Not even close.
Not even close.
So if that's 45, yikes.
Okay, so what is the strength of field at the Bermuda Championship this week?
I mean, I'm assuming it's not as high as the Euro if I was getting 40?
62.
62. Wow.
So
wow.
Put that in perspective for everyone. Last week, the Zozo was 645. This week, it is 62. You're almost 600 strength of field points less than last week. So for anyone who, and obviously, like I said, this is a wide open horse. I mean, anyone can win this tournament. So it's going to be, it could be very entertaining coming down the stretch. But with the Masters coming up, we're missing some big names. And, you know, it's going to be, I just hope that with it being this wide open, that we don't see someone come out and just have like a 3 or 4 shot lead and just, you know, coast on Sunday. That wouldn't be any fun to watch. Let's get like a, you know, what we haven't seen in a long time, Colby? Let's get like a 7-man playoff.
Playoff.
Exactly. You know how you never see that? Like, you never see really big playoffs.
That's true. You know what is going to be fun this week, though? It's going to get windy in Bermuda.
Is it?
Windy. Oh, yeah.
What's the forecast?
We're playing Thursday. It's supposed to be decent. Thursday, the wind's supposed to be gusting 10 to 15. Friday through Sunday, the wind's going to be somewhere between 20 and 30 three of those days, which, I mean, once you get those gusts up into 30, and I mean, if it's blowing 30, then you might even have gusts to 40, so it might get a little weird at Port Royal on Sunday, and I'm here for it. I'm here for the gusting, howling winds, guys coming down the stretch trying to win a PGA Tour event.
Absolutely, and I think that, you know, I think you'll hear a lot of, especially the Oklahomans, about, oh, the PGA Tour pros, when the wind blows 5 miles an hour, they complain and oh, blah, blah, blah. And, to me, it's very interesting to see how the pros play in the wind, because, you know, the ball chain changed everything, because you used to have to hit it low and you used to have to work, and now you can just hit it a mile in the air and just let it go. And so, you know, we talk about dialing the ball back, but I just think you have to adapt and overcome. And so I think, you know, you talk about the wind, and, you know, Bermuda is kind of up there in the North Atlantic. And so, you know, there's a lot of European tour players playing, Colby. So do you think that this might maybe benefit maybe some of the European players, as opposed to maybe your California, Florida boys who aren't used to heavy winds like that, or maybe even benefit maybe some local boys, Oklahoma or Texas players?
I think that's entirely possible. I don't know. You look, a couple of weeks ago, the wind blew quite a bit at Punta Cana. Punta Cana had Bermuda greens as well. And guess what kind of greens they have in Bermuda?
I'm going to assume Bermuda.
They've got Bermuda in Bermuda. Now, if they were playing this golf tournament in Bent, then they would have Bent.
Where the hell is Bent?
That's a great question. I have no idea. But yeah, Bermuda greens, strong winds. So I think there's some correlations there to Punta Cana.
My question is, where's Zoysia? I want to go there.
That's a good question. Zoysia is at Paynes Valley in Hollister, Missouri. In on Paynes Valley. So without further ado, why don't we go ahead and start at the bottom, and I'll pick a guy who played pretty well at Punta Cana, also played well at Sanderson Farms, both in weaker fields, second and sixth at those two places. Tyler McCumber at 7,300, top sixes in two of his last three starts, and I'm getting him for 7,300. That is my cheapest player this week. If you're looking for him on DraftKings, he does not have a picture. He is a silhouette on DraftKings. So Tyler McCumber at 7,300, my cheapest option.
Yeah, and I think that you're going to see a lot of that. You talk about the no pit just because it's the strength of field. Some guys are getting in who they're not. And so I'll go with my two cheapest guys. My first cheapest guy, Colby, is a friend of the show, may I say, and kind of fit both.
Shout out, Ryan.
So to kind of fit the categories that we fit earlier. So heavy wind's going to blow, and you need someone who's been used to it. Well, Ryan played college in Oklahoma, so he's played in plenty of wind. Australia has a lot of wind as well. So Ryan's apt to it. Ball striker has made his last two cuts, his last tournament at Punta Cana. Colby finished 21st. And for DraftKings, I think a very disrespectful price at 6,300. So sign me up for that. That way I can get, even though it's a wide open tournament, that way I can get me a little more top heavy lineup, especially for someone who's getting disrespected at that value.
Yeah, fair enough. He did have a good finish at Punta Cana. Hadn't had the best summer, you know, hadn't totally been on his game. But I actually seriously considered Reen, but I didn't love a ton of guys at the top, so I didn't go real top heavy, so I didn't need him too much. Like, we might be switching this week. I'm taking a lot more guys in the 7s and 8s, whereas I usually go 6s and 10s, and you usually take a lot more guys in the 8s. So, Snake Draft, who you got next?
My second cheap Scott Colby is a guy who's been playing pretty well, talked about him a few times. I had him picked either last week or his last tournament a couple tournaments ago, and you had him as well. Give me Anibon Lahiri. Over his last three starts, Colby 37th, 6th, and 36th. So, I mean, that's pretty good golf. And at 7,400, just a little bit more expensive than your Tyler McCumber have been playing well. And I just think, you know, I remember Lahiri a few, it was probably 2 or 3 years ago, maybe a little bit longer now, where he was a top 50 player in the world and was, I mean, playing really good, maybe even a top 30 player in the world at one point in time. And so I think that, and he was a fairly young guy, so he's, you know, he got to turn it around at some point and maybe get some form. I don't think that he was just one of those one-hit wonder type of guys. And so looks like he's got his game coming around. And so for that price, I'm going to roll with Lahiri until I see another miscut.
Yeah, I'm all good with that. I'm with my next most expensive, I'm going 7,800. I'm going Scott Stallings at 7,800. He's very hit or miss. There's a lot of volatility in Stallings' game. Stallings has three finishes of sixth or better in his last 10 starts, but nothing else inside the top 35. So I've got a feeling that he'll get you to the weekend, and if he does play well, this is a field with a lot of young guys looking to kind of break through. Scott Stallings won three times on the PGA Tour. Now, it's been half a dozen years since he won. That was his last one, was in 2014 at Torrey, but I think that he could have a chance if he can give himself a look to be there late in the week. And then at 7,900 with my third most expensive, I'm going with a guy that you like and you've picked a lot. I'm going to run him out this week. Good ball striker in what's supposed to be heavy winds. Give me Patrick Rogers this week. I figured you'd like that one.
I do like it. I don't have him picked, actually. You know, he I believe he has missed his last two cuts.
Back-to-back missed cuts, he's due, Tyler. He's due.
See, that's the thing. It's golf such a fickle game. You turn around at the random times. And, you know, he's kind of like my next pick where, you know, this is a little bit smaller strength of field, but you look at the form and you say, you know, why is he priced like that? And so my next pick, Colby, is one of those people where, you know, I think you brought him up a few shows ago, Colby, as just maybe, you know, someone whose odds were so low. And I was like, well, he had missed five cuts in a row. Finished 32nd last week at the, or 2 weeks ago, whenever it was, at the at Wentworth. And I look at 8,200 and I say, how the hell is Danny Willett that expensive with this form that he's had? And it's one of those things where a lot of times you see that and you say, stick away. But, you know, we talk about all the time, Colby, as bettors, you see that line in Vegas and you say, how the hell is, you know, is that team favored by three? You know, they should be favored by 10. And all of a sudden the underdog wins. And so I kind of get a little bit of that feeling with Danny Willett here. I don't see why. I think he should be cheaper than he is here. It's just one of those things where he fit into the money and it's like, maybe he turns it around this week. Like you said, finished, you know, top 35 last week or whatever it was. And so it's just one of those things where it stuck out to me in a weird way, and that's the only reason I'm going with it.
Yeah. No, I don't mind that at all. I think that that's a good pick. I'm looking at 8,000 for my next cheapest. This is a guy that I had at Punta Cana. I had him in my best bets at Punta Cana. He plays well on Bermuda. He plays well in this part of the world. It's Pat Perez. So I'm riding with him again. He doesn't seem to miss cuts in these weak field type of events.
I thought about picking Perez.
Yeah, doesn't really seem to miss cuts here. So I'll take Perez at 8,000. And then my second most expensive is Scott Piercy at 8,500. Good ball striker, veteran, who I think could put himself in position to win the golf tournament. So I've only got one left. So fire away.
Yeah, I think I messed it up. I think I only gave one when I was supposed to give two. So
you might have.
I think I did. So I tend to do that. So my third most expensive guy, Colby, is, you mentioned earlier, a guy who doesn't have a picture, but he's 8,700 over his last three starts in inverse order and went 8th, 14th, and 21st. Give me Justin Suh.
I thought about him. I couldn't afford him.
87, I mean, that's you talk about a guy who's, I mean, I look on here on DraftKings, he's made three of eight cuts, but his three cuts have been the last three events. And so nothing else before that he had played on here before then. And so, yeah.
Stanford guy, right?
I believe so.
Stanford, yes. Or Cal? I think it's Stanford.
I believe Stanford.
He came out in the same class as Morikawa, Hovland, and Wolf.
He's that young. I thought he was a little bit older.
Out in the same class as those guys, and he's accomplished just slightly less than those three. Less.
Yeah, and so maybe if he wins this turn, maybe he'll get propelled in the same group as those three.
Maybe. Probably not. He'd have as many PGA Tour wins as Victor Hovland.
And, you know, be interesting. I think this strength of field might be higher than Porter.
Does Wolf still just have the one? He's got a lot of seconds recently, but I think he still just has the one win.
Yeah, he just has the one. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yep. He is a top 12 player in the world, I think, though. Not bad.
Yeah, pretty good. Not bad. Yeah. So he's a lot higher than Ricky, the fellow OSU Cowboy.
Lot higher than Ricky.
Yeah.
Yes. Who, by the way, will probably not get to be the game day picker this year at Augusta. By the way, game day is going to Augusta.
Who do you think will be the game day picker? That's a good question.
It's a very good question. Somebody that Augusta is willing to let on the property.
Would it potentially be someone who misses the cut?
Ooh. Maybe they just do like a mystery, like a surprise guest picker, and then somebody misses the cut and they run up on set and make a pick. I'm in. I'm all the way in on that.
Could be that, or maybe it is, this is what I they may end up doing. Maybe it's one of the old legends who's playing maybe. Are they even going to have the par three contest?
No par three contest.
No, okay.
Split tees.
Okay, no yep. Par three contest. So a lot of the old guys may not even be. Are they going to do opening tee shots?
That's a really good question. I have no idea.
My question is, are Jack and Arnie and these guys who normally come in to play the par three, are they even going to be there?
Because Arnie won't. Jack and Gary
won't.
Well,
I mean, obviously, obviously.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and the reason I said that was I would think that, you know, they might put on like Jack or Gary Player, one of these older guys who would be there for the par three, and right. Then who would already be there and have them stay till Sunday till Saturday when they would already be there. But I mean, I think besides the fact that you're getting a player who just missed the cut and might be pissed off, I think the best player who misses the cut is probably the way to go.
Yeah, I think that'd be a good idea. So, okay, give me one more and then I'll give you my most expensive.
Okay, so yep, and then my next one, Colby, is a guy, last two starts, finished fifth and second. Give me Peter Mount.
Okay, yeah, he had a good finish. He finished high at Punta Cana, didn't he? Or was it Sanderson?
Sanderson Farms finished second, went 70, 67, 70, 63 on Sunday, and then he's gone 66, 62, 71, 66. So five of his last six rounds have been below 66, and his highest score has only been a 71. So sign me up for that at a 9,000 price and a field of this strength.
Yeah, I like that pick. He's been playing well here lately. My most expensive, what's up, Doc?
Doc Redman?
Doc Redman, baby. Give him to me. You know Clemson, I'm a Doc Redman guy.
Yeah, you are. Clemson,
you know,
Tiger. Doc Redman.
You know he has more top threes. Pardon me. He has more top fives in his last three starts than Harold Varner has in his career.
Really? That is...
Really, really?
I wonder what the start comparison that is. I'm sure you don't have that in front of you, but I know
I do not have that in front of me.
No, so I know that that is very interesting stat. And I thought about Redmond this week as well because I do have a little extra cash.
Ball striker in the wind, baby.
Exactly.
Ball striker in the wind.
And so my last pick.
Pardon me, I did botch the stat. He has more top three finishes, which is what I said originally. More top three finishes in his last five starts than Harold Varner III has in his entire career.
That's insane.
Yeah. And Harold Varner III is 25-1 this week, whereas Doc Redman is sitting at 28-1.
So I would assume that if you were debating between those two, we know who you're going with. And so I'm going, Colby, I'll read off these last few starts to you. This is just a cut make a machine here is my most expensive guy. We got 34th, 35th, 21st, 29th, 44th, made the cut at the PGA, then a 9th and a 3rd before that. At just a little over 10,000, give me the Argentinian, Emiliano Grillo.
Okay. Yeah. Most expensive this week?
I don't think he's the most expensive. No,
you're most expensive.
Oh, my most expensive. Yeah. Yes, he is my most expensive. Yep. You know, like I said,
most expensive this week is actually Brendan Todd.
Yes, correct. Defending champion Brendan Todd.
Defending champion
this
Brendan
is
kind of, Todd.
This is in that stretch where he won the back-to-back tournaments right before the President's Cup last year.
Yeah,
this
was one of those. The five guys who are above 10K are Brendan Todd at 11-1, Zalatoris at 10-9, Harold Varner at 10-7, Doc Redman at 10-4, and Emiliano Grillo at 10-1.
Those are
all your guys priced above 10. So, I mean, do as you will, folks. Do as you will. This week is kind of a crapshoot. Give you a quick rundown again from top to bottom for me. Doc Redman, Scott Piercy, Pat Perez, Patrick Rogers, Scott Stallings, and Tyler McCumber.
My top to bottom is Emiliano Grillo, Peter Menotti, Justin Sue, Danny Willett, Anubhan Lahiri, and friend of the show, Rian Gibson. And do we have any overlaps?
I believe we have zero overlap.
When's the last time that happened?
I don't know. We usually have some overlap.
Because you're a copycat.
You usually try to hop in the backpack and, you know, ride your way to victory. But did you cash last week, by the way? In our pool, did you cash last week?
I cashed 2 weeks ago.
You did cash 2 weeks ago. I've cashed 2 weeks in a row.
I can't even remember what day of the week it is. All I know is it's 2020. That's all that this year and this weather's got me remembering.
Yeah, being
That's
trapped all. Inside for 3 days and not being able to do anything kind of distorts your sense of time a little bit. Seems like everything's just running together a little bit. But, yeah, Bermuda this week, some best bets. Look, this is a wide open field. Anybody could win. If you want to bet somebody at the top, go ahead. I think I'm going to take a pass on betting anybody at the top. I'd go with Redman at 28-1. I think that is a pretty good play. I mean, it's guys that I have in my DraftKings lineup. Stallings is a veteran who hadn't won in a while, might be due. He's 80-1, way down the list. If you're looking for somebody at 100-1 or worse odds, I mean, it's a weak field. You never know. A guy like Keith Mitchell could hop up on some Bermuda greens, start making a bunch of putts, and win the golf tournament. So I'd love to give you more confident picks this week, but it is the Bermuda Championship, and it is a wide, wide open field.
You got it still pulling in front of you, Colby. I want two names I want you to look up for me. You said no one was better than only two players better than 25-1. Look up for me. What is Stinson's odds?
Stinson odds, I think I saw him at 50-1. Let me get back in here and check it. I'd actually just closed out of it, but I'm almost back to it. But I think he was in the 40-50 range, if I remember right. Henrik Stenson's 40-1.
Now, this is a guy who hasn't been playing very well, but if you would have said, you know, a year ago or even a year and a half ago in a 65 strength of field or 64-2, whatever it was, that you would be able to get Henrik Stenson at 40-1, that'd be saying something. And then the other one I want you to look up, Colby, guy who's been playing pretty well. I kind of wanted to get him on my DraftKings, and it just didn't really fit. What's Padraig Harrington at?
Padraig Harrington? Good question. Padraig Harrington's 55-1.
See, he's a
what
guy.
What a field we've got this week. By the way, Pat Perez is 60-1. Another guy I like is in my DraftKings lineup. 60-1.
See, I thought about Padraig. Finished 14th last week at the Scottish Open. I've been playing some pretty good golf across the pond. And so I think he may be one of those guys, kind of like Stuart Sink a few weeks ago, where hadn't won in a long time and had been playing fairly well and just finally comes through and breaks it through. He might be one of those guys. So if I was going to throw in two, you know, like I said, with how open of a field it is, just with those odds, if I was going to throw any money in, those would be the two guys that I would pick.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of ways you could go this week. And, you know, I think you're just kind of throwing darts at the wall and see what hits this week in Bermuda. But we got to make some one-and-done picks. Our site does not have one-and-done picks for this week that we do the season long. Whenever we started after the restart here, we will go ahead and make a pick. I'm currently ahead 6-8 to 5-7. So I'm ahead right now by about a million. We got three tournaments left, but four golfers, because we'll pick one this week, one next week at Houston, and two at Augusta National. And I still have Will Zalatoris remaining in the one and done. You've already used him, but I've still got him. So give me Zalatoris this week in the one and done.
Not bad. I mean, like I said, he missed one cut. He's missed one cut in the last calendar year or whatever it is. So pretty special stuff. Have I used Brendan Todd yet?
I do not believe so. No, you have not used Brendan Todd.
Then give me him. He might as well. Most expensive on DraftKings, defending champion. They only have 1 year of course knowledge really here. And so defending champion, I believe the only top 50 player in the world playing this event. So might as well go ahead and use him. Well, I'm not going to use him in the next 2 weeks. So
gotta love it. Gotta love it. Tell the folks about the guests we're having on Friday.
So, guests we're having Friday, I mean, one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet, and one of the biggest junior tournaments, not only in Oklahoma, Texas, just in the whole general area, the Red River Shootout, where the Oklahoma Junior Golf Tour and the Texas Junior Golf Tour get together in it's not really a Ryder Cup type style, because it's still an individual tournament, but it's just a fabulous event that gets all the best players in Oklahoma and Texas together. And the director of the Oklahoma Junior Golf Tour, Maury Rose, will be joining us on Friday to sort of preview the Red River, and we'll get into it with him, how everything got started, and I even talked to him a little bit at the Oklahoma Open about maybe about how the tour's grown and about maybe some future possibilities for the tour. So I'm really excited for Friday, not only just for our listeners to get out there, but anytime you talk to Moore, you're going to have a good time, because he's one of the greatest guys you ever meet, and the work that he's done for juniors in the state of Oklahoma. And like he was even telling me at the Oklahoma Open, they've had more people from out of state come and play these tournaments because the tour's gotten so prestigious. So Friday's going to be a really great show, folks, so make sure to stay tuned in for that. And you know, obviously we'll preview for it to there, but everyone be sure to keep an eye on the Red River Red River Shoot. I believe it's titled the Red River Shootout this weekend. It's either Shootout or Championship.
Still playing at Dornick?
Yes, awesome. Yes. So that's
I love Dornick.
We love Dornick.
One of my favorite layouts in the state.
It's perfect. They had to move it a couple years ago because Dornick was going through course
redesign, didn't they? I think so.
Yeah, and they're about to go through another redesign, from what I hear. But yes, I do believe it's still at Dornick. So we'll get the full breakdown from Maury on Friday, and it's going to be one of our best shows we've had in a long time, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to that on Friday. Everyone, enjoy the Bermuda Championship, and thanks for listening once again to the 73rd Hole.